traffic jam. Staring at the faces in a rearview mirror, looking at the promise of the promised land. One kid dreams of fame and fortune. One kid helps pay the rent.
Warrior, woke destroyer.
Only in America.
Randy Tobler.
Dreaming in red, white, and blue.
On News Talk STL.
Only in America, where we dream.
Good morning. Welcome to a big, big Tobler show. You listen, you won't want to miss this one, folks, because the dump of a Title IX travesty yesterday will absolutely frost your buns when we get into it. Zach Smith here in just a few minutes at 6:25. Of course, he's with Heritage, and while he's written the book about Soros and the rogue prosecutors, we're going to talk to him about the Trump trial, Title IX. And if you have a young lady in or going to college, if you are a young man have a young man in your house who will be going to college, you will not want to miss that. We'll be unpacking that as the day goes on. Mike Johnson under increasing heat now as he advances the aid packages under individual bills. They will be voted on. Required some Dems to get that. We see Israel now denying that they had involvement in explosions and injuries inside Iraq after the tickle and the little nudge that they did to Iran, reminding them that they're a force to be dealt with, that is the Israelis. And of course, the goings on of the week as we review those, with Mayorkas impeachment, crickets chirping never happened. The trial never happened. Welcome in. I'm Randy Tobler. There's Jerome. And we both had late evenings, but we don't care about it because there's so much to excite us this morning and excite you that we'll be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. With lots of coffee. You got the coffee cooking, Jerome? I've got the coffee cooking.
Yeah, it's still brewing, but once it kicks in, this will be a very power-packed show.
All right. And listen, if you can't catch the show right off the bat or all of it, I understand. We'll give you an excuse, a hall pass on that. But, you know, you will want to catch it because it's going to be a power-packed show. As I said, Zach Smith joins us to talk about the Trump trial, the J6 hearings that, yeah, it happened earlier in the week, but pivotal discussion and some very pithy during the oral arguments, pithy comments by Judge Neil Gorsuch that just, I thought it was one of the clips of the week. We'll have that for you. Zach joins us at 6:25. Todd Showalter, of course, the tune master, the cartoon meister himself, will join us at 7:06 or a little before. Virginia Cruda always has lots of deep analysis at 7:45. 8:06, Senator Jim Talent to talk about the Israeli-Iran conflict. I can't wait to talk to Jim about that. I think it was one of the most brilliant, brilliant strategic moves I've seen militarily in years. We'll see what Jim says and where the whole tension in the Middle East debacle and issue is going to take us. And Dr. Bob Onder joins us at 8:25. Of course, Bob's running for Blaine Lutkemeyer's seat, but we want to talk to him about this this hit piece that the St. Louis Post are Most Detached. I almost used the wrong name. They are the St. Louis Most Detached. They did a hit piece on the decline to sign movement when it comes to this initiative petition that essentially, if read carefully, would legalize abortion and release from indemnity, from any kind of liability, any botched abortions. And I've seen them absolutely ruin women's lives. We've had evidence of botched abortions that can kill women. Not only that, but apparently there'd be no possibility of medical liability claims. And again, I'm not any fan of the trial lawyers, tell me, but the careful read on this thing and the way it was misrepresented, just a travesty as far as the criticism of this initiative petition for abortion. So we'll unpack that with Dr. Bob Onder at 8:25. And look forward to having you with us as much as you can be with us on this chilly but beautiful weekend as turkey season is wrapping up its first week. I'm itching to get out there. Maybe I'll get out tomorrow. I don't know. We'll have to see. All right. Where do we start? All right. We start with Mayorkas. And Ted Cruz, I think, summed up the absolute frustration that so many of us, not only on the Senate floor, but so many Americans felt after we have watched 10, 11, what is it, 12 million invaders. I'm not going to use the word illegal aliens. I'm not going to use the word newcomers. Invaders into our country. We've watched this happen absolutely unfettered. Open the doors. I'm here for asylum. Okay, come on in. We'll give you an Obama phone. We'll give you health care. Hey, maybe you'll get a room in the Ritz-Carlton in New York. You know, who knows? We're going to bus you up there. Hope they served them some of those little biscotti snacks on the way up there. Maybe some little small single-serving Cutty Sark, too, on the way up. You never know. And after all of this, Mayorkas properly gets impeached. Which is essentially the equivalent of an indictment on the House side. They ceremonially, finally, after I think too long of a delay, they ceremonially walk the impeachment articles across the Capitol into the other side, take them into the Senate, and within a few short hours, it was all over and nothing happened. It was tabled. And here was Ted Cruz's frustration.
Sorry to say that my friend from Kansas is not wrong. In the 237 years of our nation's history, I don't know that there has been a more shameful day in the United States Senate than today. What we just witnessed was a travesty. It was a travesty to the United States Constitution, and it was a travesty to the American people.
And it really was. I mean, look, at a minimum, I think that it was, people have argued, good people have argued that Mayorkas was only doing the bidding of his president. Ultimately, the buck does stop at the Oval Office, right? Couldn't we all agree that that's the case? Maybe O'Biden should have been impeached. Who knows? Did I say O'Biden? Yes, I did. Maybe Biden should have been impeached. Nonetheless, Mayorkas has been, he has lied to Congress. How many times? I mean, we're not going to waste your time with the montage of, you know, how many times, whether it was on TV, but certainly several times under oath when asked, Secretary Mayorkas, is the border secure? The border is secure, he says smugly as he just with chin lifted high. I mean, come on, that's lying to Congress. Bill Malugin and others at Fox News have done, I think, the best reporting on that. The drones that they've had, the people are streaming across. The border is not secure. Well, he'd argue that, well, at the checkpoints, the former border crossings, of course we have troops there and it's secure. You know, I mean, these guys have got So, first of all, lying to Congress. I mean, and then not protecting the border, absolutely securing the loss of sovereignty of these United States. If that's not at least a misdemeanor, and I think it could be argued is a high crime, I don't know what is. I mean, if your job is the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, and you're letting people stream across, and then what happens in down there in Georgia? We have Laken Riley brutally murdered because she goes out for a run on the college campus. We've seen the attack on police officers followed by giving America and New York City the middle finger up in New York City. I mean, we've seen wanton violence across the land by these people. And your job is to do that, and you just openly just let people across all the while whining that, oh, I don't have the resources. If they just, it's a broken immigration system. Well, why is it more broken now than it was when Donald Trump was in charge? He was building a border wall. He made it clear we're going to close the border. He made those people wait in Mexico. He invoked the, you know, no more catch and release. I mean, he did away with that. And with the stroke of a pen within a day, Biden authorized it to happen. And Mayorkas carried it out. And that's his duty. Nonetheless, this thing should have seen a trial. He should have been convicted. At least he should have been dragged over the coals, metaphorically, in the Senate. But Chuck Schumer and the Democrats, as they will do, know how to wield power, which is a nice segue to what in the heck is going on in the GOP caucus. They don't know how to wield power. I am so flummoxed by what's going on in the House. Mike Johnson is by all measure a conservative guy. I mean, he's got a biblical worldview. He was the general counsel, I believe, for the Alliance Defending Freedom. That doesn't get more conservative than that. He has, functionally a 1 or 2 vote margin. And there are the purists, including most lately Tom Massie. When Tom Massie says he's got a problem with Mike Johnson, my support of Mike Johnson begins to waver, because Thomas Massie out of Kentucky is one smart dude. And if you hear him in the committee hearings, he knows his stuff. He does his homework. He has now joined Marjorie Taylor Greene in the vote of non-confidence. They haven't pulled the trigger on that motion to vacate. It wasn't a privileged motion, I guess, so that has to be activated, even though it's, you know, been thrown out there. And now a third congressman has said he's got to go. I still scratch my head. Why advance the Ukraine, the Israeli, the Taiwanese packages, and not first advance the border security package? I think I know why. I think he doesn't have enough support within his own caucus to even get that passed without some kind of strings attached or some kind of negotiation. But he's now had to go first for the budget to keep the government running, and now to get this, the House rules, I guess, to get these individual aid packages. Just yesterday, had to get Democratic support for that to happen. And okay, that's okay. I think good people can have discussions about aid to certainly Israel. I mean, if we don't defend Israel as the only bastion of democracy and freedom in the Middle East, I think all is lost. I mean, I think the Middle East just descends into tribal, you know, Bedouin warfare, and I mean that metaphorically, going back centuries. The anti-Semitic wiles of those nations like Iran, like Iraq, like Syria, I think would be absolutely unleashed. And I think you'd absolutely see a genocide in Israel. So I can see justifying that one. Ukraine, is Putin really going to march on to Eastern Europe and then beyond? I'm not sure. I'm just not so sure of that. Because NATO would be invoked immediately, and I think he knows he would have hell and fury to face if he ventured into Poland or into some of the smaller countries, Finland and others. But why the heck aren't we doing some Ukrainian, border security stuff and tying it? And if it means, you know, no package for Israel, no package for Ukraine, okay. I don't get it. All that said, we have to put our rational hats on at some point, and we have to ask ourselves, and Mike Johnson has made the comment, look, until you get the security briefings, the intel briefings that you get when you're in the position he's in, about what aid to those countries means and what you are really fighting against, you may not understand the full story. I wish he'd share some of it with us, but of course it's classified stuff. So who knows? I mean, Bush was given faulty information and acted on it in Iraq. Look what that left us. People with lost their eyes, lost limbs, maimed, dead. I mean, we spent blood and treasure like crazy on bad intel. So, I don't know, but man, we've got to get some border security. If they're not going to impeach Mayorkas or try Mayorkas and convict him, at least can't we get some border security? It's crazy. Hey, let's step aside, fill up our coffee cups, and then come back and talk to our good friend Zach Smith from Heritage. Why? Because we've got to talk Trump. We've got to talk J6 and obstruction charges. And yes, we've got to talk Title IX. The Title IX rules released by the Department of Education yesterday are the story of the week, maybe the story of this election cycle. And we'll talk with Zach about it when we come back. Stay there.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer.
on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. This is News Talk STL.
Welcome back into the program. Always fun when we get together with Zach Smith, of course, our legal go-to gentleman from Heritage and author, we might say, as well. And usually we're talking about rogue prosecutors and other things. We've got some other interesting news that dumped yesterday afternoon. And Zach, welcome into the program. We've got a lot to talk about, my friend.
Well, always great to be with you, Randy. I appreciate you having me on the show this morning.
Hey, let's start with the Title IX rules that came out with the Department of Education yesterday. And I mean, I caught Megyn Kelly on her podcast. And Zach, you know, I've heard a few expletives in my life, but Megyn was on fire, dropping some expletives. The gals over at Independent Women's Forum are furious. Mae Mailman, I mean, women who have fought so long to protect women's rights and to gain equality are furious over what came down yesterday, where I guess now, after the rules that came down, if you accept any federal money in any educational institution, you have to let a boy who's gender confused and thinks he's a girl into the girl's bathroom. Is that a correct read on those Title IX rules?
Yeah, unfortunately it is, Randy. Largely, this is a radical rewrite of essentially how the federal government will understand gender and gender identity. My colleague Sarah Perry has done a lot of excellent work on this specific issue. She has been pushing back aggressively against this anticipated rewrite. You know, it's unfortunate this rewrite has been a long time coming. Many suspected the Biden administration was going to try to push it out before, you know, the election in an effort to, I suppose, pander to the Democratic base. And it seems like that's exactly what happened. But look, this ruling is going to be absolutely devastating for women across a variety of instances, particularly in higher education. Women's sports will be absolutely devastated by this. You will see, as you said, probably, you know, the right of men now to use women-only facilities if the federal government goes through and actually implements this final rule. But thankfully, I don't think this is the final word on this rule. Lawsuits are likely to be filed. And because of the good work of, you know, my colleagues at Heritage, people like the Independence Women's Forum and others, a lot of rule comments were filed during the rulemaking process that hopefully will give some ammunition to those who will challenge this rule as it's being implemented.
Well, you know, Zach, what's really worrisome about this is I was reading the Washington Post, because you do have to look at what the other side says. You don't want to be in the conservative echo chamber, you know, all the time and see what others. The Washington Post and other liberal outlets are trying to excuse this away, saying that they've sort of left the athletic part of this untouched because they're deferring some comment on that. But as I understand it, there's almost three. I don't know what you think and your folks are saying, but I'm reading that like almost three dozen times they mention locker rooms and access to locker rooms. So the last time I checked, Zach, locker rooms are an integral part of the athletic experience. So, I mean, but it's almost like you got to fact check what the Washington Post is saying, because they're trying to excuse this away and as though athletics are still somehow protected, depending on how the individual institution wants to parse this issue. I think it's disingenuous.
Well, I think that's right, Randy, and I'm not shocked to see the Washington Post putting forward disingenuous information. But look, you know, I think particularly when you consider this new rule in light of the past practices of the Biden HHS, when you consider it in light of some of the cases that the Biden Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department have pursued, I think it becomes very obvious that this is going to be implemented in a very radical, very harmful to women way. And that's obviously a very unfortunate thing for women and really for us as a country.
Now, the other element of this that hasn't gotten a lot of press, and this just came down on a Friday dump yesterday. I mean, that tells you a lot. I think I'm thinking from a policy perspective, this is a disaster for women. On the other hand, politically, for the conservative movement in this election cycle, I think it could be a good thing. I think a lot of those suburban moms that may have flipped from Trump in 16 to Biden in 20 may have second thoughts when they look at their daughters who have worked so hard to, you know, whatever, to track and field, you know, whatever sport they're in, basketball, you name it, to then, you know, swimming, to then risk having to not only undress, you know, and share a locker room with a guy, but then compete against and potentially get injured by a man or a boy participating with them. I'm thinking some of those so-called suburban soccer mom gals that were the, you know, are going to be a pivotal part, they may have second thoughts about going for old Joe. I mean, irrespective of what they think about Donald Trump's demeanor. I mean, I think politically this could actually backfire on Joe Biden. I don't know.
Well, I think if you talk to people really across the ideological spectrum, many are very troubled by this development of men participating in women's sports, particularly at the college and high school level. And, you know, if you talk to, as you said, kind of the suburban soccer moms, if you talk to fathers of many different political persuasions, they will tell you, obviously, they are deeply, deeply uncomfortable with and troubled by the idea of men sharing locker rooms with their daughters, their wives. And so to see this, you know, being forced upon the American people, kind of at the 11th hour, in this way, as you said, in the Friday night dump, it's a very troubling thing. But I do think you are right, Randy. Many Americans of all political persuasions are not buying into this radical gender identity effort that the Biden administration and others are pushing so aggressively. Yeah.
I think the other slimy aspect of this that hasn't gotten much play is that apparently, and again, you're the legal scholar here, I'm not, but apparently students will lose their right. And I think we're talking mainly about male students on campus. They're the ones that get accused of sexual impropriety, sexual assault more often than women. Let's be honest about it. Apparently, this is really eroding, if not eliminating, due process rights of men that may be convicted or may be accused on campus of, you know, sexual assault, et cetera, et cetera. Can you unpack that a little bit from what you know? I know that the rules are just fresh, but apparently the schools will be required to use the preponderance of evidence standard and that there really isn't a cross-examination right. What does all this mean?
Yeah, so look, this is something that came up initially during the Obama administration. It was put forward by what's known as a Dear Colleague letter, basically a letter to universities and school administrations about how the administration is interpreting certain regulations and rules. And exactly what you said, Randy. Essentially, if a student is accused of sexual misconduct, which could be a violation of Title IX and imperil a university and their federal funding and that sort of thing, that if someone is accused, they get kind of a kangaroo court process, to be perfectly honest with you. You will hear instances of students being accused. They don't get to confront the accuser. They don't get to call witnesses. They don't get kind of those hallmarks of due process that we all, you know, cherish and value so much. Now, during the Trump administration, many of those rules were rolled back. And unfortunately, it looks like the Biden administration is now moving away from those basic due process requirements, essentially arguing that somehow requiring someone who, you know, accuses someone of sexual assault, requiring them to be confronted by that individual, to allow the individual accused to, you know, potentially cross-examine that person. All of those things, you know, no longer look like they'll, you know, have a place in many of these administrative type hearings.
Yeah, and you know, we have seen men that have been, their lives have been ruined. I mean, I think of the Duke soccer team, you know, I mean, what a travesty that was. And I mean, I just, of course, no one wants to in any way, shape, or form allow sexual predators to get off the hook. But my God, there has to be some due process when such a serious allegation is made. I don't know. This is just insanity. Well, of course, Zach is not only the Heritage's SCOTUS guy and go-to and is a host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast and author of a book that has gotten rave reviews by Bill Barr, Andy McCarthy, Edwin Meese, called Rogue Prosecutors. But I wanted to break down with you the SCOTUS thing and get back to the arguments this week. Mm. And let me play for you, Zach, what happened when Neil Gorsuch was questioning the Solicitor General. This was the juiciest clip of the week. I know you've heard it, but I want the audience to hear it. And then we can talk about it. Here's Neil Gorsuch on the obstruction case for the J6, Mr. Fisher. Here we go.
So what does that mean for the breadth of this statute? Would a sit-in that disrupts a trial or access to a federal courthouse qualify? Would a heckler in today's audience qualify, or at the State of the Union address? Would pulling a fire alarm before a vote qualify for 20 years in federal prison?
Man, he was talking about the Kavanaugh hearing. He was talking about Jamal Bowman pulling. I mean, this, I don't know. I think there's a role. If he ever wants to retire, Zach, I think there's a great, great opportunity in talk radio for Neil Gorsuch. What happened during those arguments and what does it mean?
Well, Randy, I'll have to look over my shoulder. Maybe you can replace me with Justice Gorsuch if he's ever interested. Although he is not good on some of the gender identity stuff, as we saw in Boston, unfortunately.
He is not.
But look, you're spot on. This was a great kind of cross-examination type questioning by Justice Gorsuch of Elizabeth Preliger, who's the Solicitor General for the United States, who argues cases before the Supreme Court for the U.S. But look, I think his questions really cut to the heart of the hypocrisy of many of these prosecutions of these January 6th defendants. And certainly, you know, they're facing very serious charges in many instances, essentially charged with obstructing and interrupting an official proceeding of Congress. But it's Justice Gorsuch, I think, was subtly and not so subtly making the point, look, many people have engaged in equally as problematic conduct. And yet, because they were either Democrats or supporting left-leaning causes, they were not charged with these serious, very serious charges. They either received a slap on the wrist, a citation, essentially, a misdemeanor-type charge, or they weren't really prosecuted at all. And so to see many of these defendants now facing these charges under a very expansive interpretation of this statute, I think is very troubling to very many people. And, you know, it's interesting, Randy, is this case, this Fisher case, I think has flown a little bit under the radar for many people this term, but it may have very wide-ranging implications because not only could it potentially impact the prosecution of many January 6th defendants, but it could also impact the prosecution of Donald Trump. If the court rules in favor of Mr. Fisher, several of the counts that Jack Smith has brought against Donald Trump would potentially be no longer valid as a result of this decision. But
this is really, I found this so fascinating, Zach, and you know, I try to be an amateur law student, and you don't usually give me high marks, but I think I'll try again. I'm looking at U.S. Code 1512, subsection C, subsection 2. Here it is. Whoever corruptly, one, alters, destroys, mutilates, or conceals a record document, or here's number two. Whoever corruptly otherwise obstructs, influences or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so shall be fined or imprisoned not more than 20 years. Okay. So Zach, we've been seeing, let me give you a hypothetical. I mean, this is sort of down the Gorsuch rabbit hole, but okay. We had pro-Palestinian protesters block the Golden Gate Bridge. Let's theoretically say that someone was trying to lives in San Francisco and was trying to go to Oakland or vice versa, and they were on the city council and they couldn't get to a meeting. Wouldn't we theoretically be able, under this same application of this law, be able to say that those Palestinian protesters should be charged and held under solitary confinement, just as the people are in the J6 issue? After all, you obstructed a city council meeting, or is it only federal? But you know what I'm saying here. I mean, you know, it seems like you could apply this to anyone in any case that obstructs a, quote, official proceeding. No?
Now, Randy, you always get gold stars for me for your amateur lawyering. And I think this shows, you know, the perfect reason, because you're right. Certainly, you know, I think this would broadly apply to the federal proceedings. So maybe I'd change your hypo a little and say somebody was trying to get to federal court for jury service and they couldn't do it as a result of that.
Yeah.
Or something of that nature. Maybe a judge is trying to get to the courthouse to preside over court. But look, I think we have to go back to understand why this law was passed in the first place and how far afield it's being used now. This was a law that was passed in the wake of the Enron scandal. If you remember, after Enron kind of went belly up, many of the people who worked there shredded documents, took steps to purposefully obstruct the investigation into the fraud that had taken place, and really didn't cooperate with investigators and tried to purposefully derail the investigation. And so this law was passed to try to combat that type of situation. So now to see a law that was originally designed to combat essentially, you know, purposely obstructing an investigation, purposefully obstructing, you know, an official kind of investigatory proceeding into what happened, now being applied in these very new and novel circumstances, I think that's what Justice Gorsuch was getting at. You know, under the government's interpretation of this statute, it could be applied in a very expansive, very capacious way that could potentially sweep in broad swaths of conduct. That's really troubling in any way you think about it, but it's particularly troubling when you consider the selective way the government is now using that statute under this expansive interpretation.
Okay, so I get a C minus because I was applying this to any proceeding, but it's about any official or federal proceeding. But you're right. I mean, a judge or a juror trying to get to a courthouse, I mean, it could apply. The hypocrisy is just so rotten fish, stinky. It's just unbelievable. Okay, finally, the juror selection is now over with the Trump trial in Manhattan. I'm surprised that there's two attorneys in the juror box. Yeah. I think that seems unusual to me. From what you know about A, the process, and B, the result, and who's sitting in that juror box, what are your thoughts as the opening arguments unfold on Monday?
Well, you know, we've said it before, Randy, this is really an unprecedented historic situation in a lot of ways. You know, we've never obviously had a former president who's been criminally prosecuted. We've never had a leading candidate for the presidency who is facing criminal prosecution. And so as a country, we are in uncharted territory. Now, I think Donald Trump and his legal team are probably concerned whether or not they can get a fair trial there in Lower Manhattan. You know, we've seen the statistics from the 2020 election where only a very small percentage of people are registered Republicans or, you know, claim to have voted for Donald Trump in the 2020 election. And so, you know, considering the high profile nature of this case, considering the politically charged, you know, politics and emotions involved, this jury selection actually moved at a very quick pace. You know, frankly, I suspected it might take a little bit longer than it actually did, but they have the requisite number of jurors in the box and the requisite number of alternatives. And so it looks like we will hear opening statements on Monday. But the other thing I'll mention quickly, if I can, Randy, you know, Donald Trump, he often comes out and talks to reporters before and after the trial proceedings. And he made a very good point the other day, I thought. You know, he said that every day that he's required to sit in that Manhattan courtroom is a day that he can't be out on the campaign trail engaging in, you know, the politics that we expect a leading presidential candidate to do. And I think that's a very important point, and an important point to recognize that, you know, regardless of the outcome of this trial, this is incredibly time intensive, it's incredibly resource intensive, and it's diverting attention that Trump and his team otherwise would be devoting to campaigning to regain the presidency.
Look, I don't think it's unfair to say that the Democrat machine, through weaponization of the judicial system at local and at federal levels, I think they're willfully trying to destroy this man personally, physically, financially, psychologically, certainly politically. I mean, can you imagine the strain? I mean, I can't believe this guy's stamina and resilience. While I've had my problems with his foul mouth up on the stump and the way he, you know, is not loyal to people, I've got problems with him. I mean, to see this willful attack in many ways, other than politically, on this guy, that gets to me, Zach, and I think it's getting to a lot of people because of the unprecedented nature of it, you know. And but it's amazing to see him. I mean, he goes down to the bodega and he's like, he's getting the kids and their parents are like, oh, Trump, Trump. It's an amazing spectacle to watch, and we'll be following it with you as we move along through the season. Hey, thanks for spending extra time with me early on this Saturday morning, but we covered a lot of ground. I appreciate it, and I'll study up for our next exam, so I'll do better. Okay.
Well, I look forward to it, Randy. Always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for having me on this morning.
Yeah, and I want to invite everyone. By the way, Zach, I don't know. I guess you've authorized some kind of a sale, because right now there's a little sale on the book, on your Rogue Prosecutor's book, on Kindle, on the Kindle version on Amazon. I'm just saying, if you guys haven't read it, you have. I've got it, and I love it. It's a fabulous book. So you and Cully Simpson did a great job on that, and I hope folks will pick it up. Thanks, Zach Smith. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Randy. Take care.
All right, you too. There he is. Boy, lots to talk about, huh? Hey, when we come back, I like to play the common man or the common woman letting the progressive left have it. We'll bring that to you when we come back on the Randy Tobler Show. Stay tuned.
Thank God for the daylight. I spent a long time in the dark. Felt good saying goodbye. Waking up to a brand new heart. And if you're sleeping like I used to be in a grave that holds.
Randy Tobler, truth warrior, woke destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. This is News Talk STL.
Well, you know, we the people are increasingly upset and insulted and can't take it anymore. You know, you think of that old movie Network. Remember when the anchor said, I'm mad as you know what? Heck, I won't use the other word. I'm mad as heck and I can't take it anymore. That's the way an increasing number of Americans who don't traditionally wear MAGA hats, who don't traditionally show up at Trump rallies, who don't traditionally, you know, send their kids to the conservative Liberty University, okay? Hillsdale. So I want to paint a word picture for you. The other day in Chicago, where, of course, the immigrants are over the invaders are overrunning the city. It's already in financial trouble. There's crime is rampant there. They're draining the coffers like they have in New York City and in Denver and everywhere else. Picture this. Mayor Brandon Johnson, council members are at a meeting. And during the public comment, a woman stands up. And she's an urban, inner city, Chicago black woman with a MAGA hat on. And she describes what happened to a friend of hers or to someone in the neighborhood in those cities, in that city. And here's the beginning of this discussion. We're going to break it down for you. Here it is.
I'm P. Ray of the 37th Ward. Chicago Red is our organization. Because we started this session with a prayer, I want to start my comment with a scripture. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, but if any provide not for his own, and specifically for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So I want to talk to y'all today about not going to hell.
So she quotes scripture and saying, you got to take care of your own or you're going to go to hell. And I'm going to tell you all how not to go to hell. That's how it starts. And then she tells a story of a woman who her daughter, they're in the living room. Her daughter gets shot by a stray bullet and dies and bleeds out in front of her. And this woman, they had lived in this house, this building for 40 years. And I think, you know, she tells the story of this. This woman then gets hooked on drugs because wearing her woman in jail, she gets hooked on drugs. She gets in jail for possession, wearing her daughter's rest in peace, a sweater or a T-shirt and she's behind you. So this is someone in the neighborhood. And here she talks about where the opioid settlement money should have gone rather than to migrants. Play it.
I am here on behalf of the Jones family, on behalf of the 37th Ward, on behalf of Black Chicago, on behalf of the entire city, to ask you all to vote no and put that money back in the opioid settlement fund. We need that money in my neighborhood. We need that on my block. That woman should not be at Cook County Jail because she's grieving over a random act of violence that caused her to lose her child in front of her face, when the city of Chicago has millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to give to people who ain't paid a dime into the tax base.
All right. Now, this is a discussion about these invaders. Think about it. These people are invading these cities, taking money away from the programs that would be used to protect these drug-infested enclaves in the inner city. And they're taking money intended for that and spending it on these invaders. I'm getting worked up just thinking about it. Well, she got worked up a little bit more because she's paid taxes. Mrs. Jones, who's the self-medicating and getting in jail for it, is behind bars. They paid their taxes. Take a listen.
We've been in my building for 52 years. We're about to pay some old taxes. The Jones family has been in their building for 45 years, paying taxes every year on time. So I'm asking y'all to use our tax money for our people. We need it. We got people leaning. We got people rocking. We got overdosing. We got pass out lines. You live on the west side, Mayor Johnson. You know exactly what I'm talking about. We need the
And here's the end of it, where she says, you know what? It's got to stop. We're bringing them in. We're paying their way. Listen to the end of it.
Chicago, we are the headquarters of the cartel, and everybody in here knows it. They selling more drugs than the law can allow, and y'all giving money back to them because they traffic those people up here. So we paying them going and coming. Absolutely not. We pay too much. It costs too much money to live in this city.
Well, there you go. And this is a red MAGA hat wearing inner city person. I think things are a-changing. When we come back, we talk to Todd Showalter. We'll see what he has to say about the goings-on. You're listening to News Talk 101.9 94.1. Stay tuned.